Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Dick Dady, executive director of Citizens Union, which describes itself as a nonpartisan good government group dedicated to making democracy work for all New Yorkers. Citizens Union serves as a civic watchdog combating corruption and fighting for political reform. Dick Dady, welcome.
Glad to be here, Alan. Thank you.
Okay, let's get right to it. Let's jump right into it. There's a big controversy. I'm on one side of it. You're on the other. And it has to do with redistricting, the redistricting amendment. And this November 4th, New Yorkers will vote on an amendment to the state constitution to reform the process by which congressional and state legislative districts are drawn. For decades, New Yorkers have been subjected to a redistricting process that has allowed legislators to draw their own district lines, giving way to partisan and self-interested goals, to put it mildly, and resulting in districts that divide neighborhoods and bear little resemblance to actual communities. Dick Dady, I think we're in agreement that the way it's been done is bad, right?
Without question.
Yeah. And so along comes the governor in negotiation with the legislature and comes up with a plan. And that is where you and I disagree to an amendment, a proposed amendment to the state constitution. You go first.
Sure. I mean, this is a very appealing amendment because it does end the self-interested process of legislators solely drawing their own lines. Right now, as you said earlier, the legislators have full control over drawing their own lines. And this process does create a politically balanced and independent commission. Politically balanced because each of the four legislative leaders have two appointees each. Those eight appoint an additional 10 for a total of 10. So it forces upon the process some separation and distance from the legislature. It creates a need to collaborate as they come to draw these lines. The appointees will be accountable to the Constitution and the new rules and the criteria and process that are laid out, which is very strong. One of the appealing attributes of this is it will end partisan gerrymandering as we know it in New York State. There's a proposal in the Constitution that said that no district shall be drawn to favor or disfavor candidates, incumbents, or political parties, which is what the current process allows today. It also will say that districts shall not be drawn to discourage competition, which also happens today. So this is an opportunity for New Yorkers to actually seize power and take it away from the legislature and invest it in a commission, but also invest it in New Yorkers, because we will have new opportunities to hold the legislature accountable if these maps come up and show that gerrymandering that has defined New York State government for the last 50 years ends.
Okay, Dick Dady, I respect you and think that it's fascinating that you come out with that opinion, because I take the opposite view. I think what happened is that the governor and the legislature worked out a narrative which on its face does what you say. But in fact, it doesn't end anything. In fact, it says that when these guys disagree or if the legislature doesn't like what they're presented with, they do it themselves. So what's new?
That's not true, Alan. What's not true? What you just said is not true.
All right.
You need to read the amendment and you need to read the accompanying text.
Believe me, I read the amendment. I've talked to all kinds of experts on it. And, you know, to say go ahead.
Then you would know that the legislature has to approve or disapprove the plan as presented the first time. If they disapprove of it, they have the opportunity to provide suggestions. It then goes back to the commission. The commission still has to draw the lines according to the new rules and the criteria with the input of the public in a way that we've never had before. All the information, all the data, all the maps need to be made available in real time to the public at the same time as the legislature. The commission comes back with a second plan. If the legislature rejects it a second time, which is highly unlikely.
No, I think it's very likely, Dick, but go ahead.
Because it's never happened in the United States when such a commission exists that a legislature would buck a commission that presents a second plan. Our model is based on the Iowa model, which all the good government groups supported the last couple of years. And this is the legislature's proposing with the governor that our constitution be amended to reflect this Iowa model that we all once supported. The other thing is that if the legislature rejects it a second time, they then have the opportunity to alter, not start from scratch. They have to then work from the last plan of the commission. They have to respect the criteria that bans partisan gerrymandering. They cannot alter any one district by more than 2% of the population, which is a severe restriction on their ability to amend the plan in any significant way.
Okay, here's the way I'm reading this. If after two rejections of the commission's plan by the legislature, quote, if either house shall fail to approve the legislation implementing the second redistricting plan, as you've laid out, or the governor shall veto such legislation, the legislature shall fail to override such veto, each house shall introduce such implementing legislation with any, big letters on any, amendments each house of the legislature deems necessary. Meaning, look, first of all, they come up with a commission. Who appoints the commission? They do. They can't put themselves on. Maybe they can't put their wives on. But every one of these guys who wants to continue in office and wants to draw the districts the way they've always drawn them will come up with a plan that will be self-serving, like everything that they have ever done in their lives. And so I don't see this as what you say it is. I think the whole idea was to fool people into saying, okay, here's an amendment that is going to work, but doesn't in fact do what we expected it to. And there's a different ethic in Iowa, I must say, than New York State, which has had, from Boss Tweed on up, as you know better than anybody, a culture of basic political filth. So I don't agree with you.
Well, you know, if you also looked at the accompanying statute, it shows the limitation that is being placed on the legislature in altering the size of the districts by no more than 2%. That's a significant restriction, and that's being overlooked in this argument. People are not looking at the whole package that has either passed the legislature already or is being presented to the voters. And also, you know, it's unfortunately cynical to kind of tear down a proposal that will give New Yorkers the power to hold the legislature accountable for partisan gerrymandering. In Florida recently, in 2010, the voters added a similar ban to their constitution saying that no lines for new districts shall be drawn that continues the practice of partisan gerrymandering, essentially banned that practice. The League of Women Voters and others took the legislature to court after the lines were drawn for the 2012 election, and a judge in August, earlier this month, upheld and said the lines were drawn badly. The legislature had to go back and redraw them. Now, this whole thing is in court still, but it gave Floridians, just like it will give New Yorkers, the opportunity to hold the legislature accountable that we do not have right now. And, you know, let's keep in mind that a vote against this proposed amendment will essentially preserve and keep in place the rigged, corrupt practice right now. This is an opportunity for New Yorkers to start to change the culture in Albany. Is it the end-all and be-all? No. But will it provide a new floor for us to seek further reforms to the redistricting process? Most certainly.
Well, wait a second now. Don't we still have an opportunity to pass an amendment which really does it, as opposed to this half-brained thing?
The unfortunate thing about our state government is that any change to the redistricting process has to involve the legislature's approval.
Okay, fine.
You think
so?
We had 186 legislators in 2010 say to us that they were going to create an independent commission for 2012. 186. They did not. They misled. And to think that if this goes down, that we can go back to the legislature and say, you know what? We want a better system, you know, with no legislative approval. You know, I want world peace too, Alan. I want goodwill on earth toward all. You know, I would far rather have fewer wars and less violence in pursuit of that. And so this whole argument is making the perfect the enemy of the good. We will never have the legislature give up its control of the redistricting process.
Well, and in fact, you're exactly right. And they will not give it up. And they haven't given it up in this amendment. It's meant to fool people. You know, in the end, they get to control the process. And that is what I have objections to. Look, you have people on your board, like the very good friend of the governor, Steve Cohen, who obviously understand the system and should not have given away the store, which is what I think
No one's given away the store.
Yeah, you have.
No, you haven't. I think that's a disservice to say the store has been given away.
That the service is what you're doing, endorsing basically a bad plan. But we shouldn't call names. Okay, let's try to avoid that. If we can avoid that'd be better. Because otherwise it sounds snotty and condescending, and I don't want to do that, and
you're calling the plan a bad plan.
It is a bad plan.
Actually not true.
Yeah. It's a bad plan because the governor comes into office. He campaigns on a single issue, and that single issue is a major issue. He says, I'm going to veto any bill, self-serving bill, that the legislature hands me. He doesn't veto it. Hey, now he negotiates with the legislature and comes up with what I consider to be a phony thing in which, when they don't like what's being done, they end up being able to do it, as well as appoint their own friends to the commission. Yeah.
But let's look, you know, it's a commission that's politically balanced, unlike the one we have right now, in which the majority party in each house controls the outcome.
When you say politically balanced, what do you mean?
Each of the four legislative leaders have two appointees. So yeah. The minority in the assembly has the same number of members on it as the majority in the assembly, and the same thing in the Senate. The other thing is there has to be a supermajority to vote in favor of a plan. So it forces upon the 10 members to come to a strong consensus. There has to be, you know, seven members have to approve this plan, unlike right now where the majority parties control it. And so it kind of, you know, there's a whole new level of scrutiny as well, because it will guarantee public access in a way that we've never had before. And as I said earlier, we cannot discount the fact that this bans partisan gerrymandering and gives us new leverage to ensure that these the Republicans draw the maps to favor their representation upstate, and then Democrats in the Assembly do it in the Assembly to favor New York City and downstate.
Exactly. We agree on the problem. What we don't agree on is the fix.
That is going to be fixed with this new criteria.
No, it's not. No, it's not, because in the end, and really, you know, we can say yes, no, it doesn't matter till the cows come home. But in fact, I say that the legislature have left themselves a way out. And I think everybody listening to this program is going to know they did, because in the end, if they don't like what they see, they do their own thing.
No, yes. They can't. The Constitution requires that no district be drawn to favor or disfavor incumbents, political parties, or candidates.
Now, Dick, you don't really believe that, do you? You don't really believe that even with the restrictions that are on there, that they won't take every bit of solace that they can from changing within that 2% a community here and a community there in terms of the gerrymander, do you?
We will have a new legal platform to basically take the legislature to court if they fail to comply with the new provision in the state constitution. If this fails, we will not have that leverage at all. We will keep the status quo of the legislature on its own and in its entirety drawing these lines. And if you know, the opponents of this say, let's hold out for something better. Well, we've worked for 10 years to get this. This system has been in place for 50 years. This is an opportunity to move the ball forward in a significant way.
Okay, now, Dick Daty, we don't agree, and we could yell at each other, but I know you're a good man, and I know you're concerned about this, and I am too, and I hope that we can at least respect each other's views on it. Let's talk a little bit about public corruption. The Moreland Act Commission. You know, Governor Cuomo comes in the middle of the Moreland Act, says, go home, you're done. Preet Bharara, the fighting U.S. attorney, comes in and says, I'm going to take a look at this because it stinks. What do you make of it?
The governor should not have shut down the Moreland Commission. His commission, which he and Schneiderman appointed, had the legislature under a level of scrutiny that it never has had before and was beginning to expose, you know, corrupt practices that, unfortunately, in some ways are permitted in New York State. You know, as you well know, Alan, and I've talked on your show here, you know, campaign accounts are legalized bribery, where people trying to influence the decisions of legislators and statewide office holders give lots of money. Even if, you know, it's amazing, you know, in the legislature, a lot of these people, here in New York City, two-thirds of the current incumbents running for re-election do not face a party primary. But they have raised lots of money from lobbyists and others, even though they have no opponent. And so what do they do with that campaign cash? They do it to pay for all the things that they feel they need to have in order to run their office and to be an effective public servant. A lot of personal use gets used for their own purposes. And that's the legalized corruption that goes on here in New York State.
So we're agreed.
Commission.
So we're agreed on that. What does Preet Bharara do now, the U.S. attorney?
Well, I think the unfortunate thing is our laws are so permissive that it allows great personal use of campaign funds. So I'm hoping that he will show some, you know, double dipping. He will, you know, I mean, what he may be able to prove, and I think I'm not sure what he's looking at, but you know, if a incumbent legislator both used his or her campaign cash to pay for an expense but also build the state for it, then that's double dipping. And, you know, taking money for one expense, taking money from two separate sources for one expense. Also, have some of the legislators who have outside business interests? Have they benefited inappropriately as a result of their business dealings with people who do business with the state? And so I think those are the two areas that he's looking at that the Moreland Commission was beginning to look at
so,
as well.
So why did the governor
finish the job?
So why did the governor, Dick Daty, why did the governor end the commission, do you think?
Well, you know, he has said that he ended it because he got, in exchange, as part of a political deal, you know, improvements in the state ethics laws, which we supported. But we don't think that in getting, you know, progress on state ethics and strengthening of the anti-corruption statutes and the anti-bribery statutes in New York State is the kind of thing that should have resulted in closing down the Moreland Commission and continuing to pursue corruption.
Are you satisfied with the change in the ethics rules? Because I'm not.
Well, I mean, I'm not, you know, reform is an incremental process. I am pleased with the progress that we are making. We are far from being finished. But, that, you know, over the last 3 years, we have made two significant steps forward. We have many more steps to take, you know, and we're on that path. And hopefully, Parit Bahar will help us be able to move even further.
Okay, campaign financing. Obviously, with what you've said is right. The governor comes into all of this. He's got somewhere. He'll go into the election with somewhere between $35 and $50 million. That's a lot of money. Yet he says he's for campaign financing. What do you make of that?
You know, it's the current rules allow him to do that.
Yep.
And that's why we need to change the rules. And that's why we need campaign finance reform.
But do you think he's real in this? I mean, you know, he's got... He's going to go in $50 million or $35 million. Do you think?
What's happened here is he has raised a lot of money. And I think that as a result of having a lot of money in his campaign account, he has chilled the opposition. So that people, you know, realize that if you're going to challenge the governor into a competitive contest, which we like competitive elections, which is why redistricting reform is so necessary, so we can have greater competition in our elections. But having a lot of money also, you know, chills your opponents. It doesn't make people want to run against you because you don't have the access to the resources that an incumbent has.
Sure. But doesn't it stink like fish? I mean, you know, the idea that you'd say you're for it, but on the other hand, you've raised all this money. I mean, in the end, isn't that hypocritical?
I think hypocritical is probably too strong a word, but I think it would have been great to have him put some self-limits on his campaign and show that he not only was politically committed to the idea of campaign finance reform, but that he was also going to personally take advantage of self-imposed limits.
Dick Daty, we have terrible turnout in the primaries. Shouldn't state and federal primaries be on the same day?
Yes.
Why aren't they?
Well, they aren't because, you know, the Federal Move Act required that overseas and military voters had to be given 60 days notice. And so the judge, you know, set the date for the federal primaries over which the federal government had jurisdiction in June to comply with the new federal law. The state doesn't feel like it needs to have our own state races comply with the federal law. And so we have them on two separate days, and that helps to depress turnout. It's most unfortunate. You know, the September primary should be moved to the end of June. And we also believe that the state legislative sessions should end earlier so as to allow candidates to run in June without it interfering with important political and policy decisions and the kind of, you know, quid pro quo that could go on right during an election season.
Are you satisfied, Dick Daty, with the election laws themselves? I mean, when I'll give you an example, Zephyr Teachout, you know, she collects 45,000 signatures. You need, 15,000. So she gets three times as many. Then the governor tries to disqualify her because she sent something in from Vermont as opposed to living in New York, where we know she was. So I'm asking a question here. Hasn't this become very self-serving? One of my earliest jobs in politics is they sent me down to Varick Street to check out signatures and whether people had put their middle initials, you know, in and to throw some schnook off the ballot. Have we made real progress here?
We have made progress, but as I said earlier, progress is an incremental series of steps. You know, there have been changes, good changes, that have lessened the requirements that are needed to get onto the ballot. But they're still too onerous, Alan, as you've just pointed out. You know, candidates wanting to run for public office should face far less burdensome requirements. The signature requirement should be lowered. The kind of strictness that, you know, dotting the I's and crossing the T's that are often required should be removed, you know, because it does depress competitive elections by keeping challengers out of politics. And that's not good for our democracy.
Have you ever wanted to run for office, Dick Dady?
Yes, but I became wiser as I grew older and decided not to.
So, you know, I just want to say one thing in terms of our earlier discussion, and that is, I don't want to go back into it, but I do think there's a huge difference in the cultures of an Iowa, the political culture of a Florida even, where they have had some remarkable reforms, and of a New York State where the old boys have run things for a long, long time, which is, after all, why the Citizens Union has been established and why it's doing such good work.
Right. I mean, and you know, Alan, we've been around for 117 years, and we've taken the long view of how our political system changes, and it's in incremental steps. We are relentless incrementalists. You know, we have our high principles and our strong values, and we fight for them each and every day. But at the end of the day, we want to make progress happen. And that is why we, you know, are urging New Yorkers to vote yes for progress and support Proposal 1, because we think it's the first opportunity that New Yorkers have to take away the power. It's not perfect, Alan. You know, we agree on that. This is not perfect. But from Citizens Union's perspective, it is a strong improvement over our current system. And if we fail to do this, the status quo will be preserved, and I don't think that there will be any future motivation or incentive for the legislature to change the way in which we draw the lines in the next 15 to 20 years.
Except when the people explode. I mean, I think that's why there's something. Listen, Dick Dady, I want to ask you a question.
Sure.
Why are so many newspapers coming out against this thing?
I think that, you know, the people don't. It's a very complicated subject. And I think there is.
You don't really think. You're not really saying that the editorial board of the Times Union or maybe of the New York Times or whatever don't know what they're doing, do you? Because these are very bright people.
I think there's been, you know, some unfortunate overlooking of certain facts that would strengthen this case. I also think that there's a lot of cynicism, both within the public and in the media, toward the way in which our New York State government operates.
Cynicism about New York State politics? No, say it isn't so.
And I think that, you know, the kind of holding out for the ideal and demanding the perfect actually fuels that cynicism, because New Yorkers just then throw up their hands and say, why even try? Citizens Union takes a different approach and say, we're going to try, we're going to, you know, fight for progress, and we're going to get what we can get, hold it, and then come back the next day and fight for more.
Are you a vegetarian?
No.
You see, your predecessor, George Hallett, all those years ago, he used to take me for egg salad sandwiches. We had to go to places which were vegetables.
I'll take you for a pastrami on rye when you come down to New York.
And believe me, if it's Katz's, I'll go in a moment. Our guest has been Dick Dady, executive director of the Citizens Union. Dick Dady, thanks so much for joining us. Congratulations on all your hard work.
Thank you, Alan. Good to talk with you.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.